God above is the reason we're here, and I'm going to give him glory every single day for it.
That's Cindy Hyde Smith in Mississippi last night.
I actually brought notes because this is so important. I don't want to miss anything. I want to cover everybody out here. First, of course, I want to thank God for this opportunity. My wonderful family, Mike and Anna Michael, you both deserve a round of applause.
One more Republican in the Senate. That brings the count 53 to 47 now. So we have the Republicans have a 6-member lead in the Senate. And that's an important thing, especially when it comes up to the next fight over a judicial appointment, because President Trump needs all the help he can get rational, reasonable, conservative judges appointed to the court, wherever that might be. Good morning. Mark Congleton here. You're on board with The Daily Perspective, and I hope you're having a good day so far, wherever that may be, whether you're here in the U.S., whether you're overseas. Good morning to I know at least one person in the U.K. Good morning. And elsewhere, it's good to have you on board. Thanks so much for being there. I appreciate it more than you know. It does mean a lot to know that you are there. So thanks a lot for being there. Wow, today is going to be a fun day. We've had Cindy Hyde Smith, who has won. She is now taking that important seat in the Senate, and it was an interesting campaign. Of course, the race card was played and played heavily during this campaign. And it's interesting that when it comes to the left, if the race card is available, it will be played. It just will be played. And, of course, they tried to. It's so much so that Democrat activists even hung nooses over the limbs of a tree in order to draw attention and to accuse Cindy Hyde Smith of being a racist. It was just a horrible, horrible thing. She used an unfortunate choice of words in describing something involving a public hanging, and it wasn't wise, wasn't smart, but wow, what they made out of it was just nasty. And so it's a good thing we're seeing now another Republican. Hopefully she will be a wise Republican and be a conservative Republican and do what's right. President Trump late last night congratulated her for handily defeating an insurgent challenge by Democrat Mike Espy in Mississippi's contentious special election runoff. She's become the first woman ever elected to Congress from the state. And this gives Republicans a net gain of 2 Senate seats in the midterm elections, a 53-47 advantage in the upper chamber, and that's a margin that could prove critical in contentious confirmation battles which are to come. That's just one of the stories facing us today, and we'll be touching on a handful of things. For example, Jesse Kelly is back on Twitter. His account mysteriously reappeared after being told that he had not only been just suspended, he wasn't suspended, he was banned from Twitter. He had the letter from them to prove it, has posted the screenshots of it. Everybody who cares has seen it. And now they're saying, it was just a temporary suspension. Oh? And we'll touch on that later. Another update. You remember the woman with the children in the viral photo with the tear gas at the border? She had something interesting to say about the United States of America. We'll take a look at that. Secretary Nielsen at the DHS, speaking of the border, issued a statement on the border crisis. It's a doozy. I'm going to try to bring that to you in its entirety today. And there's been this climate report that was released last Friday. I have basically just stepped away from it because it was the typical leftist scare tactic is what it was. And I thought, well, this is very strange coming out of the Trump administration that this is what is being said. What we know, considering what we know about the whole climate change farce, this scam, it was really strange to see what was said come out of the Trump administration. And I thought, there's got to be more to this story. This is one of those situations where, you know what, we're just going to put this one on the back burner and wait for it to come up to a boil. It has. We'll take a look at that a bit later on. But first, let's go back to Cindy Hyde-Smith before we move along any further. 59-year-old Hyde-Smith is an ardent supporter of President Trump. She was appointed earlier this year by Mississippi's governor to fill retiring Senator Thad Cochran's seat. She's going to finish out the remaining 2 years of Cochran's term in the deep red state that went to Trump by nearly 20 percentage points in the 2016 presidential election. Trump tweeted, "Congratulations to Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith on your big win in the state of Mississippi, the great state of Mississippi. We are all very proud of you." With 95% of precincts reporting, Hyde-Smith had 446,927 votes to SB's 374,880, a commanding margin of 54.4% to 45.6%, according to state election officials. The race marks the final midterm contest of 2018. She said during this victory party last night, "I want everybody to know, no matter who you voted for today, I'm going to always represent every Mississippian. Being on the MAGA wagon, the Make America Great Again bus, we have bonded, we have persevered, we have gotten through things, we were successful today." Hyde-Smith's win gives Republicans more leeway to ensure the confirmation of Trump's federal, judicial, and cabinet nominees that require Senate approval, and strengthens the party's chances of holding the majority in 2020. Mike Espy said in his concession speech, "She has my prayers as she goes to Washington to unite a very divided Mississippi." National Republican Senatorial Committee Chairman Cory Gardner said in a statement, "Cindy Hyde-Smith has been a strong conservative voice since joining the Senate, so it should come as no surprise that she was elected by Mississippians to represent them in Washington. Senator Hyde-Smith won tonight because she has a trusted record of fighting for Mississippi, and we're happy she will be returning to the United States Senate." Let's go back a little bit. Mike Espy. Let me look at what he said one more time here, and that is, "She has my prayers as she goes to Washington to unite a very divided Mississippi." Do you know what has divided Mississippi? Leftists, Democrats, liberals, progressives. They have divided Mississippi because that is their political tactic, to divide, to inflame a segment of society, to make accusations, to make people angry, and to pit people against one another in order to divide the thinking of a state or a country. They make a certain part of the voter base into victims, convince them that they're victims, and convince them that they're victims because of the opposite party. That's why someone like Mike Espy would say that Mississippi was divided. The division comes from the left. And this is something I keep harping on, especially if you follow what I post in social media, and that is that this stuff always comes from the left. Division rises from the left. Hatred rises from the left. Violence rises from the left. It's all rising from the left. I remember in 2007, 2008, during that presidential campaign, I remember noticing a stark difference in attitudes of people when people like Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson and the like began coming out to campaign for Barack Obama. Suddenly, people who got along, people who smiled and acknowledged each other, people who would nod and say, "No, you go ahead," in traffic, people who respected one another and had no problems with one another, suddenly we're at odds with each other. And I mentioned this to my wife, Jane. I mentioned it to friends. Have you noticed just and something that it struck me because on my commute home, a rather long commute back from the office every day, it struck me that I was running into, not literally running into, but I was having encounters in traffic with people who, rather than just looking at me and raising an eyebrow and pointing and saying, hey, can I get over? They would scowl at me and just move in. And that election pitted black people against white people. It divided us. And for 8 years, we heard the gospel of division coming out of the White House. For 8 years, the race baiters, the fear mongers, they took control and had their agenda front and center. And they made people angry. They made people believe they were victims when nothing could have been farther from the truth. And so, when Mike Espy says Mississippi was divided, Mississippi's been divided by politicians, leftist politicians. Mississippi and other states in the South have been divided by the Democrats because that's their method of operation. You divide people against one another. You pit people against one another. You sow discord, distrust, anger and resentment, and you campaign on that to defeat those evil people who are holding you down. It's consistent. It happens in every election. If race is a possible card to play, it is played every time. Now, I don't know where you're listening from. I've touched on it a couple of times, but I live in the state of Alabama, and other parts of the country will look at Alabama and go, yeah, rednecks and idiots. Well, no. We have NASA. We have some of the best medical facilities in the state, in the United States. No. Every state has people who are, like Jeff Foxworthy says, rednecks are everywhere. They're not just in the South. You have that everywhere. I know. I have been, to Walt Disney World during certain school out weeks from different parts of the country, and I have seen uncouth and unsophisticated people from all over the country. They're everywhere. But here in the South, people point at us and say, yeah, those rubes. You know, they had all that, slavery and stuff going on. Yeah, that was Democrats. And Democrats still today want to divide the races against one another for the sake of controlling people. So Mike Espy can say Mississippi is divided, but he has to own that division. He and his political party own that division. It's theirs. Because as you heard in the opening segment, in the very opening, Cindy Hyde-Smith, as she was thanking people, listen to who she thanked.
Thank you so much. This is just an unbelievable night. This has been an unbelievable campaign. But you know, God above is the reason we're here, and I'm going to give him glory every single day for it. No doubt.
Sounds a lot like a lady who spends some time in church to me. And as I don't know her personally, I'm just going by this statement and what I've seen in the news, just like you. I don't think she's a divider. I really don't. She says she's going to be there for all Mississippians. Of course, she has to, because she's been elected by the state to represent all Mississippians on the national level. But when you see these campaigns waging against each other, you always see the division coming from one side. And it's always the left. So congratulations. Congratulations to Cindy Hyde-Smith. Congratulations for your win. Congratulations for persevering and overcoming the deceptive and hate-inspired leftist campaign that sought to divide the people of Mississippi, to inflame racial division, that actually hung nooses in a tree to accuse her of being a racist. Congratulations to you, ma'am. and to the people of Mississippi for being wiser than the division of the Democrats. Good on you, Mississippi. Now, pay attention, Mississippi. Hold her feet to the fire. Keep her responsible to you and not to the power players in Washington, D.C. That's your job now. Don't just turn your back and go on vacation and ignore what's happening. Pay attention and keep her responsible to what she's told you she will do. You have a job to do. It doesn't end on Election Day. Still to come, what the heck happened with Jesse Kelly and Twitter? We'll look at that when the Daily Perspective continues. You are listening to The Daily Perspective, a little one-hour podcast with little old me, Mark Congleton. I'm glad you're along, however you may be listening. Thank you for being there. If you're listening to the podcast, hey, thanks for being there. Thanks for subscribing. If you're listening to the Facebook Live version of the program, it happens 8 o'clock Central, weekday mornings. Hey, thanks for being there. Good to have you along. If you're listening on the TuneIn Radio app, what you're listening to is also the podcast. Well, good on you. Thanks for listening there as well. So regardless of how you're listening, I appreciate it. Thanks very much. Just between you and me, I love it when you join in for the fun live every day. Thanks for being there. But you can also subscribe to the podcast and have this delivered right to your device every single day. And when you think about it, that's pretty cool. It comes right to you. So thank you for being there, however you may be, however you may be listening to the show. Goodness gracious. It is an interesting day today. Let's see, where were we? I have so many tabs open on my browser. There we are. I was talking a little while ago about what happened with Jesse Kelly and Twitter, and we covered this the other day about how suddenly he's just out of pocket. He's gone. He's got no Twitter account. They've told him, yeah, well, you've crossed the fence too many times, and you're out of here. Well, 2 days after Twitter permanently suspended the account belonging to Jesse Kelly, by the way, he's a senior contributor to The Federalist and a conservative talk radio host in Houston, Twitter reinstated his account. No explanation, no reasoning, no, well, here you are. On Sunday, Kelly's account was taken down. He got a message from Twitter saying his account was taken down due to repeat violations of the Twitter rules. Twitter provided no additional information about which rules Kelly had supposedly violated. He's a Marine combat veteran, by the way. Throughout the 2 years Kelly had a verified account, he'd never received so much as a warning about any of his tweets leading up to the suspension that was supposed to be permanent. Following his suspension, Ben Dominich of The Federalist reported that Twitter's CEO Jack Dorsey lied under oath to Congress when testifying in a hearing about the social media platform's inconsistent and controversial rules that have resulted in numerous conservative accounts being taken down. By the way, if you haven't been paying attention to that, Twitter's been just cutting off conservatives left and right. But you don't hear about any high-profile liberals, except for one, being pulled from Twitter. It's really, really strange, isn't it? In response, a top aide for the House Energy and Commerce Committee, which oversees and regulates telecommunications companies and social media publishers like Twitter, told The Federalist that the committee is looking into whether Dorsey lied. Hours later, incoming Missouri Senator Josh Hawley called for a congressional investigation into Twitter's practices. Only after the increased attention from Congress did Twitter reinstate Kelly's account, and without any explanation. A spokesperson reportedly told Ryan Saavedra from the Daily Wire that Kelly's account was suspended only temporarily and that the social media publisher has been communicating directly with the account owner. This most recent explanation from Twitter contradicts what its employees initially told Kelly. So they said the account was temporarily suspended for violating the Twitter rules and has been reinstated. We've communicated directly with the account owner. But originally, the note that he got from Twitter said your account was permanently suspended due to multiple or repeat violations of the Twitter rules. The account will not be restored. Please do not respond to this email as replies and new appeals for this account will not be monitored. In other words, you're out of here. We're not listening to you. Don't bother shouting and waving. And you know, you don't exist anymore. Now, I mentioned that there was a leftist, a Canadian feminist, Megan Murphy. She criticized transgenderism. We talked about that the other day. Because they have a policy now that they, Twitter does. They've banned dead naming. That's the practice of referring to a trans person by his or her legal or birth name. And this is probably what got her axed. And I told you the other day that I thought what probably happened with Jesse Kelly was this. He's a radio show host in Houston. Houston is a rather liberal city in Texas. He's probably rubbed enough people the wrong way on his radio show that liberals, leftists, progressives waged a little campaign to destroy him. That's probably what happened. That's what I'm thinking. And so they just kept on pounding on Twitter until Twitter said, well, this guy's trouble. We've just got to pull the plug completely on this guy. Without actually checking for the veracity of their claims. I say that because this is a pattern that we have seen from Twitter before, where liberals will report a conservative or a conservative group for things that they haven't done just to get them silenced. This is something we have seen happen again and again and again on social media. So that is what I suspect has happened here, that some employees at Twitter didn't bother to check in to the claims to see if there was any validity to them. They, being liberals themselves, progressives themselves, accepted the words of other progressives and looked at the numbers. Wow, that's a lot of complaints. Better do something about that. They did not do their due diligence, and they pulled the plug. That's my suspicion. That's just me. I'm just spitballing here, but that's what I think has happened. And once enough people started making enough noise, meaning the threat of a congressional investigation, somebody up higher said, would you mind actually looking at this and seeing if he did anything? Oh, he didn't? Oh, fine. This is what I think is what happened. Now, Twitter is basically, it's a publisher. They have, as I said the other day, First Amendment stuff, First Amendment concerns apply, but they don't apply. It's kind of like a private business. You know, if you walk into my place of business and start creating a disruption, then it's my choice and my right as the business owner to deal with you in by preventing you from entering the business and disturbing my customers. So I can do that. And in a way, that's so super simplistic, but that's a way to look at how Twitter handles things. But the thing is that instead of it being just like a store, it's like the biggest mall in the world. And you've got somebody that employees from a handful of stores don't like. Or customers don't like this person. So they complain to employees of different stores, and those employees of different stores complain to the management, and the management tells this person, well, you just can't come in here anymore. So Jesse, bless his heart, couldn't shop at Twitter, but now he can. He's back, and good for him. Let's see. As long as we're doing updates, you remember the mother in the viral photo who was trying to avoid tear gas? She had the kids. You know, we've had the pictures. How dare you? Was the cry from progressives. Tear gassing children! Well, they weren't tear gassing children. Women and children were shoved to the front by all of these criminals trying to get into the United States illegally. And they just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. There's a couple of basic rules for making sure this doesn't happen. Number one, actually, there's only one rule. Don't try to enter the United States illegally. That'll keep everything on the up and up for you. Well, she was featured in that photo taken outside the U.S. border in Mexico after being exposed to tear gas. She's condemned the country's use of tear gas, said she needs a job in an interview with BuzzFeed News that got published Monday. 39-year-old Mariva Meza was reportedly with her five children. Five, count them! And they were hit with tear gas after many migrants decided to storm the border. A photo of her grabbing two young children by the arms and appearing to run from the gas went viral. The photo was taken by Kim Kyung-hoon of Reuters, during your interview with BuzzFeed, she said, I brought five of my kids with me yesterday. I was there with them at the wall, scared, sad, wanted to cry. And she grabbed her daughters and ran. She goes on to say she's looking for work. She wants to stay and work. Well, that doesn't qualify for asylum. There are ways to come to the United States and work. Legal ways. But if you're going to break into the country, listen, if you're going to break into my house, don't expect me to give you a job as my lawn care provider or housekeeper. It's not going to happen. Bless your heart. God love you. It's not going to happen. Well, I'll take another look at the border coming up after the break as the Daily Perspective continues. This is the Daily Perspective. Good morning. How are you today? You doing okay? I hope so. Just popped over to the feed to see the comments and see who's listening. Thanks to all of you. Glad you're there. Wherever you may be, it's good to have you along. Wow, it's midweek already, middle of the week, hump day, and we've got a weekend coming our way, and it's cold, and it looks like it's going to rain here. So wherever you are, I hope the weather's going to be nice for your weekend. Coming up next, we'll take a look at what Secretary Nielsen said about the border crisis. But wow, so many things going on. Let's see. One of the comments, by the way, Kelly, said something about, apparently, Kelly, you tuned in early on the feed and you heard the music. There's always pre-show music. Just as a heads up, there's always pre-show music that happens beforehand because I just want to make sure that there's something going before we get started at 8 a.m. And, I realized that the teaser that was on Facebook Live had the show starting at 7:55. Well, that was pre-show. It's 5 minutes beforehand. It's just there's music that starts up, and that's what we do every time. And by the way, if you're on Facebook Live right now, if you look at your screens, you'll see that's my studio. That is the studio right there, and you can see I took it about 3.5 minutes before we got started. The studio is what it is. I mean, it looks. Wow, actually, and that's two of the computer monitors. There's another one. There's two more over out of the shot, and over to the other side. There's a video monitor keeping track of what's happening on the news. There's that multicolored thing is where the crazy sounds and stuff are coming from. whenever you hear something, like that's where that's coming from. And there's actually more. So wow. At any rate. Thanks for being there. Thanks for being part of the family. And please share what's happening here with your friends. Spread the word. And let's grow the family even bigger and bigger. It's getting bigger all the time. It really is. And thanks a lot. I really appreciate it. Well, DHS Secretary Christian Nielsen has issued a statement on the migrant border crisis. It's a doozy. And I just want to read it to you in full. This is without the mainstream press, the progressive press filter, not taking it apart and explaining what it means. I'm just going to tell you what she says, because she's very clear. Very clear. She says, given the activities of the last 24 hours, this was issued the other day, given the activities of the last 24 hours at the San Ysidro port of entry, I want to provide an update on what occurred and attempt to dispel many of the rumors and much of the misinformation circulating. First, the violence we saw at the border was entirely predictable. This caravan, unlike previous caravans, had already entered Mexico violently and attacked border police in two other countries. I refuse to believe that anyone honestly maintains that attacking law enforcement with rocks and projectiles is acceptable. It is shocking that I have to explain this, but officers can be seriously or fatally injured in such attacks. Self-defense isn't debatable for most law-abiding Americans. Second, the caravan is far larger and more organized than previous ones. There are 8,500 caravan members in Tijuana and Mexicali. There are reports of additional caravans on their way. Third, the overwhelming majority of these individuals are not eligible for asylum in the United States under our laws. Historically, less than 10% of those who claim asylum from Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador are found eligible by a federal judge. 90% are not eligible. Most of these migrants are seeking jobs or to join family who are already in the U.S. They have all refused multiple opportunities to seek protection in Mexico or with the UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency. Seeking employment or family reunification? Not grounds for asylum under our laws or any international obligation. There are, however, legal ways to seek a job or to be reunited in the U.S. Fourth, the caravan members are predominantly male. It appears in some cases that the limited number of women and children in the caravan are being used by the organizers as human shields when they confront law enforcement. They are being put at risk by the caravan organizers, as we saw at the Mexico-Guatemala border. This is putting vulnerable people in harm's way. Fifth, we cannot confirm the backgrounds and identities of all caravan members which possess a national security and public safety risk to our country. However, at this point, we have confirmed that there are over 600 convicted criminals traveling with the caravan flow. This includes individuals known to law enforcement for assault, battery, drug crimes, burglary, rape, child abuse, and more. This is serious. Additionally, Mexico has already arrested 100 caravan members for criminal violations in Mexico. Sixth, our Border Patrol agents and officers responded admirably and responsibly to the events on Sunday. It is a testament to their training and professionalism that no one was injured. The accepted use of non-lethal force, also by the Obama administration in 2013, prevented further injury to agents and a mass illegal rush across the border. We will not shy away from protecting our people. I ask parents to avoid violent caravan groups and refrain from attempts to illegally enter our country. These acts will put your children in danger. Seventh, I want to thank President Donald J. Trump again for the decision to send Department of Defense to the border to bolster our ports of entry and provide force protection for Customs and Border Protection. This decision likely prevented injuries to personnel and migrants or additional damage to property. Instead of a political stunt, as suggested by some, this was in fact the act of a leader concerned about the rule of law. Eighth, this administration has been working nonstop to fix our immigration system to address the crisis at the border. We have proposed legislation and asked Congress to pass it. The president has repeatedly made clear what is needed to secure our border and negotiated in good faith. It is time for Congress to do its job. Absent congressional action, courts have misinterpreted existing laws and have made the job of law enforcement far more difficult. But the men and women of DHS will continue to do all we can to enforce the law, and DHS and the U.S. Department of State will continue negotiations with Mexico and our other partners in the region. We're optimistic that cross-border collaboration can help America, indeed the entire region, more secure. Finally, this administration warned about the danger of the caravan. We predicted the violence we saw on Sunday. We prepared to address it with additional personnel and DOD deployments. We will continue to prepare for the next assault. while looking for lasting solutions with Congress and our Mexican partners. As always, I want to thank those officers and agents in San Ysidro who, under tremendous strain, used professionalism and restraint to ensure that no one was injured as they were attacked themselves. I also thank DOD and our state and local law enforcement who were on the scene to support our people. So regardless of what you've heard from the progressive press, the fact remains that the people who are pressing against our border right now, who are trying to illegally enter our country, it's 90% male. They're young adult males. They're looking for work. They're not looking for asylum. They've been coached. They've been given the right words to say, as I've said before here. They've been told by their handlers and their advocates, tell them you are seeking asylum and tell them this is why. And then they get through that stage of the process. They're given a date to come back to appear in court to finalize their appeal for asylum. And then they're turned loose to never be seen again until many are picked up by the police and then released before ICE can get a hold of them in sanctuary cities. They're involved in hit-and-run accidents, drunk driving, crime. No, I know, it's not all of them. But we're seeing almost every day reports in the news of illegals who are committing crimes, who are hurting other people, and then turned loose again to do it all over again. And then there are the women and the children. As we heard a little while ago, the woman with the children in that viral photo, you know, we examined that photo the other day, remember? We zoomed in, for those of you on the Facebook live feed, we zoomed in and looked at various segments, sections of the photo, and you could see people posing for photographs and for video in the background. People watching the production go on. Tear gas going off nearby and people just standing around. And there's been question that that photo with the woman, actually her part, there's been the question about it being staged. But the women and children are getting shoved to the front, used as human shields, while these thugs stand behind them and pick up rocks and throw them at the Border Patrol agents that are trying to protect you and your family. I don't know if you've seen them, but I've seen the pictures of Border Patrol agents bloodied, injured from being hit in the face with rocks. So they're doing what they can to control the violence at the border. And you and I honestly should be thankful they're there doing this job for us. But the left paints them as demons. People scream. Hollywood types like Alyssa Milano, using foul language on social media, screaming, demanding the president be impeached for waging war on poor women and children. When that's not what's happening at all. And you and I don't know about you, but I am thankful that they're doing the job. Because the direction this country is going, if the progressives have their way, is only going to get worse if we don't. More after the break. You're listening to The Daily Perspective. Mark Congleton here. You're there.
Hi.
I'm scanning through things in the break here, and one of my friends is in the news. And actually, I'm a little surprised and shocked. This is coming to us from Deadline Hollywood. The genre of high-stakes stunts on live TV is looking to push new boundaries. Australia and U.S. producer Essential Media Group has teamed with daredevil performer Bello Knock. You remember him from America's Got Talent. this is one of those situations that I just can't believe that I know this guy, that he is a friend of mine, but I know Bell O'Knock, who was on America's Got Talent. Anyway, and his company, called Opportunity Knox Incorporated, they're teaming up on something called Volcano Walk Live. It's envisioned as a live 3-hour primetime TV stunt special featuring Knock in a tightrope walk over one of the world's most active volcanoes. The project, which marks Essential Media Group's first foray into the live event space, is aiming for a premiere in late 2019. No network is attached yet. There are active conversations. A location hasn't been determined. They've boiled the list down to a handful that have been active for up to 100 years based on volcanic activity, and they will be deciding on an exact location closer to the air date. Well, of course, since they haven't already, everything's closer to the air date. Wow. They've been working on this for over a year already. You know, I heard about this the other day. I heard, oh, wow, Volcano Walk. Boy, that's kind of crazy. And I thought, you know, Bello does high wire stuff. I've watched him do high wire stuff. Three stories above an audience, or literally over the audience's heads, walking a high wire. I saw him, I didn't actually get to be there, but I saw him at the Beau Rivage, where he actually walked a tightrope, a high wire, across the parking lot. The parking area, the front of the Beau Rivage in Biloxi, Mississippi. I've seen the man do high wire stuff, but I honestly didn't think, I didn't think of him as someone who would do something over an active volcano. I am going to be honest with you. I'm clenching all over that. That's just weird. Well, Bello, my friend, Bello, what are you thinking? I got to get the man on the phone. I just have to. Wow. All right, moving along. This climate report that was issued last Friday, the left has condemned the release of it. Oh, it's a Thanksgiving weekend on a Friday. You released this report so nobody would see it on a Friday. Yeah. The Obama administration did Friday data dumps like crazy. They dumped them on Friday afternoon because they knew nobody would be paying attention. They did it a lot. So, yeah. Yeah, they dumped it on Friday, the Friday after Thanksgiving, knowing that nobody's paying attention to the news but the news wonks. But so, well, it's been repeated throughout the media that global warming could wipe out a tenth of the U.S. economy by 2100. Now it's a top-line finding of a major government climate report, but it's based on a study funded by groups affiliated with two major Democratic donors. So these are climate change advocates. The oft-repeated claim also stemmed from a global warming projection that's come under increased scrutiny from experts, including one who called it outlandish. The federal government released the second volume of the National Climate Assessment, or the NCA, on Friday. The federal report issued dire warnings, including from ice sheet disintegration on accelerated sea level rise, leading to widespread effects on coastal development lasting thousands of years. By the way, if the ice sheets and all of this, if the polar caps are going to melt and the sea levels are going to rise, why does Al Gore own beachfront property? The report also claims that global greenhouse gas emissions is expected to cause substantial net damage to the U.S. economy throughout this century, including a 10% hit to the nation's gross domestic product in one extreme scenario. This is all coming, though, from a 2017 study supported by the charitable foundations funded by major Democratic donors. The study was also funded by other organizations, including the National Science Foundation, the U.S. Department of Energy, and the Skoll Global Threats Fund. It was also funded in part by the Bloomberg Philanthropies and Next Generation, which were founded by former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg and San Francisco billionaire Tom Steyer, respectively. Both of them leftists, both of them anti-Trump, both of them progressive. Well, there are four big problems with this major climate change report. First, it wildly exaggerates economic costs. One statistic the media outlets have seized upon is that the worst climate scenario could cost the U.S. 10% of its gross domestic product by the year 2100. That 10% loss projection is more than twice the percentage that was lost during the Great Recession. The study, which was funded in part, as I've already said, by climate warrior Tom Steyer's organization, calculates these costs on the assumption that the world will be 15 degrees Fahrenheit warmer. That temperature projection is even higher than the worst case scenario projected or predicted by the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC. In other words, it's completely unrealistic. Second problem, it assumes the most extreme and least likely climate scenario. These scary predictions in the National Climate Assessment rely on a theoretical climate trajectory that's known as Representative Concentration Pathway 8.5.
Sorry, I couldn't find what you were searching.
Oh, really? Fine. Thank you, Siri. Representative Concentration Pathway 8.5. In estimating impacts on climate change, climatologists use four representatives, such trajectories, to project different greenhouse gas concentrations. To put it plainly, Representative Concentration Pathway 8.5 assumes a combination of bad factors that are not likely to all coincide. It assumes the fastest population growth, a doubling of the population to 12 billion. Doubling! The lowest rate of technology development, slow GDP growth, a massive increase in world poverty, plus high energy use and emissions. Now, I'll tell you something. That low rate of technology development, the slow GDP growth, the massive increase in world poverty, it's happening in socialist countries, in progressive-led economies around the world. It is happening, but not to the degree that they're projecting. Well, despite what the assessment says, Representative Concentration Pathway 8.5 is not a likely scenario. It estimates nearly impossible levels of coal consumption, fails to take into account the massive increase in natural gas production from the shale revolution, ignores technological innovations that continue to occur in nuclear and renewable technologies. It's basically bogus. Point three, it cherry-picks science on extreme weather and misrepresents timelines and causality. In other words, it's more fraud. It's cherry-picking the science. It's misrepresenting the timelines. It's basically presenting falsehood. And then fourth, energy taxes. The National Climate Assessment stresses that this report was created to inform policymakers and makes no specific recommendations on how to remedy the problem. Yet the takeaway was clear. The cost of action, which they say is 10% of America's GDP, dwarfs the cost of any climate policy. The reality, however, is that policies endorsed to combat climate change would carry significant costs and would do nothing to mitigate warming. Even if there were a looming catastrophe like the National Climate Association says, they're talking about spending a lot, a carbon tax of between, that this is coming from us, from you and me and people around the world, between $135 and $5,500 by the year 2030. An energy tax that big would bankrupt some families and businesses, and would launch the world into an economic problem that we may not recover from. So, the report that all the people are just going nuts about, the climate report, it's all based on the same old bogus leftist stuff that the rest of them have been based on. So there's really nothing to worry about. It's just more lies, more political manipulation intended to frighten people into submission. That is what climate change is all about. It's corrupt politicians trying to frighten people into giving them power and control. Remember that when you hear them talking about climate change. It's all about progressive power and control. Well, before I lose control, let me move out of the way. Time to go. Thanks for being there. Join me again tomorrow morning for the Daily Perspective. God bless. Bye-bye.